Live and Lansing with Michael Cohen. This is More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Hey, it's 6:35 Thursday evening. Michael Cohen, producer Benjamin Robinson on 1320 WILS. As we ramp up to next week's opening of enrollment for the healthcare exchanges, we wait to see if Obamacare will be defunded. The question remains, though, are we even heading in the right direction? Let's get some perspective from an expert on the subject. Marshall Kapp is the director of the Center for Innovative Collaboration in Medicine and Law at the Florida State University College of Medicine. Marshall, thanks for joining us on WILS.
Good evening.
What does that collaboration look like between medicine and law?
Well, we're trying to get people from the medical profession and the legal profession to at least talk to each other and listen to each other and try to find some common ways of serving the consumer population that both professions are there to serve.
Do they tend to get along, the two sides?
There are a lot of issues that that they agree on, a lot of common ground. People tend to think about antagonism between the two professions, particularly in the medical malpractice context. So it's not that all doctors and all lawyers are going to love each other, but it is important that they know how to talk to each other and respect each other and collaborate, because they both are serving the same population. The doctor's patient is also the lawyer's client.
You got your law degree from George Washington University. You got a master's from the Harvard School of Public Health back in the 70s. Did you consider medical school, too?
No, I couldn't stand the sight of blood. That's why I became a lawyer.
Well, that's certainly a good reason. I guess you can't avoid that as a as a doctor. Okay, give me your overall feeling of the Affordable Care Act. Is this are we heading in the right direction by instituting this?
Well, of course, we won't know. We won't know for a while until we actually see how it plays out in its implementation. I would have preferred an approach to health reform, and clearly we needed to do something with our healthcare system. I would have personally preferred an approach that put more emphasis on consumer choice and control. I think the Affordable Care Act represents a number of missed opportunities.
But isn't that the claim by advocates that these healthcare exchanges really provide this massive choice?
Well, if they work, they will provide choice. I think the medical savings account approach with high deductible insurance policies would have been a better way, would have incentivized consumers to be more more choosy and more intelligent in their healthcare choices. But, you know, clearly there are good and bad elements in the Affordable Care Act. It's a huge bill, a huge piece of legislation. Mm-hmm. And the exchanges, yes, if they properly work, should provide consumers with a degree of choice and control over their health care.
I'm talking to Marshall Kapp, director of the Center for Innovative Collaboration in Medicine and Law at Florida State University. Now, the major insurers are saying we're in for a major premium rate hike. Aetna CEO calls it a premium rate shock is what we're in for. How concerned should we be, you think?
Well, again, we have to see how it plays out. The key is going to be how many young, healthy people who are currently uninsured sign up for the exchanges. The whole notion is that younger, healthier people who are less likely to use a lot of health services are going to subsidize the health insurance and the health care for people who are going to use more services. So whether that subsidization occurs is going to depend on whether the young, healthy people enroll.
Do you think they really will, though? Do you think they will? I mean, we're asking them to pay, what, $200 a month for insurance, something like that?
Well, it will depend. I mean, I think there are disincentives for a lot of younger, healthier people who haven't used a lot of health care in the past and who don't anticipate, and of course, you never know, you can't predict the future, but for people who don't anticipate using a lot of health care in the near future, under the Affordable Care Act, they can wait until literally the moment of walking in the hospital door before they have to buy insurance, because the Affordable Care Act prohibits insurance companies from doing traditional underwriting activities like declining people who apply for policies or not covering pre-existing conditions or charging people who are at higher risk premiums that are consistent with those risks.
I'm curious, though, don't you think, though, realistically, that for most early 20s, kids that age, that we'll see, in fact, that happening, that they won't be signing up in a timely fashion?
Well, they're called the young invincibles. They think they're invincible. And waiting until the last minute to buy insurance, knowing that the insurance company can't turn you down and can't exclude pre-existing conditions, might be, from a financial perspective, a very rational choice to make. So, you know, we'll have to see how good a selling job the administration and all of these navigators who've been funded by the federal government to try to encourage people to sign up, we'll have to see how good a job they do.
Do you think the first several months or even first year of Obamacare, how well do you think this machine is going to operate initially?
Well, initially, certainly there are going to be problems. And the question is, are those just technical glitches that are likely to occur with any big new initiative where those glitches get cleaned up within a reasonable period of time and the program starts running smoothly? Mm-hmm. Or are there just inherent problems in the design of the program that are going to prevent implementation, successful implementation, even beyond the startup period?
So
we have to see.
If these young people don't sign up, then we're going to see, as a result, these very big rate hikes. I guess some are saying hundreds of percent higher than what people are paying now. Is that essentially the connection there?
Well, that is the possibility. It's what in the insurance business they call the phenomenon of adverse selection. If the only people signing up to buy insurance are people who are likely to use that insurance, then yes, the premiums will go very high. The whole idea of insurance being affordable is that you spread the risk, including a lot of people who are not likely to use the services. That's the whole crux of getting the young, healthy people to sign up so that they can subsidize the higher users.
So what do you think will happen then? If that does occur, as some are concerned it may, what do you think will be the result? Do you think we'll be able to maintain the program?
Well, you won't be able to maintain the program without massive infusions of new tax dollars. If there are costs, and there will be costs, question is how big the cost, but if there are costs, somebody's going to have to pay those costs, and if they're not paid by premiums being handed over by younger, healthier people enrolling in the exchanges, mm-hmm. somebody else is going to have to pay that, and that's probably going to be the taxpayer.
Now, in one survey, 60% of 5,000 doctors surveyed said the new healthcare law will have a negative impact on patient care. Only 22% said it would be positive. Is that another thing we should be worried about, the actual quality of the care we'll be getting?
Well, again, I mean, that's hard to predict. It may well be that a lot of people have to switch their physicians. If a person enrolls in an insurance plan through an exchange, those insurance plans are going to contract with individual providers to be within the provider network. And if I have a physician today that I like, but I enroll in a new insurance plan through an exchange, and my insurance plan does have a contract with my provider, then I'm going to have to find myself a new provider.
Well, that doesn't sound like good news for a lot of folks. In terms of understanding the Affordable Care Act, do you think, have you yourself read through it explicitly?
Well, I have, but that's my job. I teach health law and health policy. I don't think the average person has tortured themselves that way.
Did anything jump out at you as a real fatal flaw that needs to be changed right away?
Well, it's hard to say. The whole act is built on, and particularly the insurance provisions, are built on presumptions about how people are going to behave, how consumers are going to behave, how healthcare providers are going to behave, how insurers are going to behave. And the success or failure of the act is going to be determined in large part by how accurate those assumptions are. Now, I will say, though, that one thing that people need to keep in mind is that the Affordable Care Act is primarily about getting insurance to people that don't have insurance. Having an insurance card, even if the Affordable Care Act is successful in that, having an insurance card does not automatically translate into good access to good quality care. The ultimate aim is to improve the health of the population. Good medical care may be one means, but it's only part of the means to achieving the end of better health for people. And having an insurance card is just one piece of the puzzle to get people access to health care. So we shouldn't assume that even if we're successful in getting everybody an insurance card, particularly given the shortage that we have of primary care providers, we shouldn't assume that insurance card is automatically going to translate for everybody into good, timely access to health care. And even if it did, that would translate into better health for the population. There are a lot of other factors that go into that.
Well, it sounds like a bumpy road ahead. Marshall Kapp, the director of the Center for Innovative Collaboration in Medicine and Law at the Florida State University College of Medicine. Marshall, thank you for joining us on WYLS.
You're very welcome.
Enjoyed having you here. Coming up next, you may be giving money to charities, but what really happens with that money? That's the question. Many people don't know. We'll talk about how effective these charities are and if many are misusing the money you're donating. That's next. Michael Cohen, 1320 WILS.